7:41 on a Wednesday, 62 degrees right now in Coffeeville. And since it is a Wednesday, that means it's time for our update with the fine folks from K-State Research and Extension. We have David and Wendy with us. How are you doing, both of you?
Good. Good morning.
Doing good.
Enjoyed the morning thunderstorm?
Definitely. Yes. It was a nice sound to hear this morning.
I was like, wow, what's that? I was walking out the dog and this morning and I saw the moon was lighting up the clouds. I was like, oh my gosh, this is so beautiful. And then I see the flashes and the thunder and I'm like, okay, it's going to be an interesting morning. So we had a couple severe thunderstorm warnings and then away we go. So nothing starts the day like some severe weather, in my opinion. It's always kind of exciting. So I guess, David, we're starting with you first. So what do you have for us? I was talking some cleaning ponds.
Yeah. So unfortunately, with the drought we've been having here, a lot of people have been having their ponds drying up or are close to being dried up. So, well, that's a situation that we never really want to be in. It does make for a good opportunity to either clean out that pond or evaluate whether it is cheaper to clean out that pond or build a new pond. Now, a lot of times, the best spot in a pasture to build a pond will have already been taken by the existing pond. So that's a consideration, is if there's another good spot in the pasture to build a pond or not. And then to also talk to the contractor you're working with, the NRCS office can also be of service to determine the best location for a pond and the cost of cleaning out a pond or building a new one. And maybe if you've purchased a property, you've inherited a pond that has some problems, maybe wasn't constructed in the best way. So it might be a good opportunity to stop using that pond and build a new pond. So ponds, it is recommended to clean them out about every 15 to 20 years because they do get silted in just from regular kind of wear and tear getting older. But it can be hard to clean a pond out and a chore, especially the last couple years when we've been getting a lot of rain at times. And one question I've gotten a couple times is, you clean a pond out and you have all that silt, or some people call it pond sludge, at the bottom of the pond. Where do you go with that? Well, of course, it's been in the bottom of the pond, so even as dry as we've been, it will still be wetter soil and it doesn't have a lot of structure to it. So you're gonna want to give it a chance to dry out if possible. One recommendation is to put it on the back side of the pond dam. You definitely don't want to put it uphill from your pond where, when it does rain again consistently, it will wash right back into the pond. But because it doesn't have a lot of structure, you want to put it in areas where maybe you're just filling in some potholes in the driveway going into that pasture, or, just filling in some ravines, that sort of thing. Nothing where it will be holding weight. Like, you definitely don't want to build a building on top of this. And then another consideration is if you've been having a leaking pond, or you're cleaning your pond out and you notice it's developing some cracks. And there's a couple different options when it comes to fixing a leaking pond. One that a lot of folks have probably heard about is bentonite clay. This is a little bit more expensive of an option. But the other option is using stock salt. You can use that, and as it eventually will get wet again, it will expand and kind of work the same type of way as the bentonite clay, only it's a cheaper option. And sometimes also bentonite clay can be hard to find. So if folks have any more questions about that and want to know kind of the more specifics of using those to repair the pond, how much is needed, and that sort of thing, they can contact me at the extension office. And then one other thing I wanted to mention that I've gotten a question on recently is any permits required to build ponds. So the only time permits are required to build a pond is if you're building a pretty large pond. So if you're going to be having a taller than normal pond dam, or you're looking at building a big enough pond that maybe you can take a small boat out on it, that's when you're going to need some permits. But just your regular size acre or so farm pond that is used to water cattle, you won't need any permits for.
Yeah, casually building your own reservoir out there.
Yeah, exactly. That's when the state gets a little more interested in what you're doing.
Look at this. Where'd this come from? Now, I guess, you know, this is something you probably see more in Western Kansas, where you actually, and this is more of a stock tank thing, where you're actually having the old school, like, aeromotor windmills and that sort of thing. Don't see that as much in this part of the state. And I actually I've been wondering, you know, how deep down the water table is. I'm sure it really varies in this part. But yeah, that's more of a Western Kansas thing, I would kind of assume.
Yeah, that's definitely more Western Kansas. But I know as dry as it's been here this summer, I have heard people, you know, talking about wells a little bit more. Or some properties around have old wells on them.
Oh, sure.
So they're looking at what it would take to get those back into condition to at least use them to water livestock.
Yeah, no, trying to get creative in that regard as well. Sure, I hear you. So also, it is, you know, we're getting into October. My family always says, we watch for deers.
That's yeah. What we say, so. Yep, exactly. Well, hunting season, rifle season for deer doesn't start until the end of November, beginning of December. This is the season for deer to definitely be out and about on the road. It's breeding season for deer. The bucks are in rut and they're all on the move right now. So you want to be on the lookout for them, especially early morning and evening. Those dusk hours is when they're most likely to be active. And then if you're driving along any wooded areas where there's tree cover for them to be in, that's when you want to be especially cautious, because those deer can dart out in front of you pretty fast. The other places you want to be looking for them, not quite so much anymore, since most of the corn or all of the corn has been harvested and the soybeans are drying down and being harvested also, but our crop fields. That's another place that deers like to hang out, unfortunately, is those crop fields to snack on those crops. So just be cautious as you're driving. If you do hit a deer, you know, you want to report that right away to your insurance company if needed. Hopefully that's not needed. And then depending on what area you're in, even on the highways, the deer can be pretty common. I know up on 169 close to Liberty, I've seen quite a few deer there,
because
there's trees closer to the highway. So just be on the lookout for them.
Even going down to Bartlesville, you see them, especially if you're, dusk sort of thing, sometimes in the morning too. So I have seen them out and about for sure several times just this past week. So I was trying to, even backseat driver, I'm like, deer.
Yeah, and one thing I've noticed, and I kind of contribute it to the drier weather, it's harder for deer to find food and water too, is they've also been on the move more during daylight hours.
Oh yeah, I've seen them actually well. A lot.
So you know, usually we say this time of year really emphasize watching for them in those morning and evening hours, but I would say really be aware of the possibility of deer any time of the day.
When does this kind of rutting season normally wrap up?
So it wraps up about December is when it wraps up. The big months are October and November, fall of the year once it starts cooling off a little bit.
Gotcha. Well, and speaking of animals, you got your coyote workshop coming up.
Yes, I have the coyote workshop coming up on November 3rd. It will be at 6:30 in the evening at the Research Center in Parsons on the corner of Highway 400 and Ness Road. Drew Ricketts, the wildlife specialist with K-State, will be coming down, and he'll be talking about coyote biology and management, kind of understanding how coyotes work and the range they cover, and then also coyote trapping and predator problems, or predator calling for those problem coyotes and other predators that livestock producers may have trouble with, especially those sheep and goat producers where it's a little bit easier for coyotes to get those lambs and kids.
Sure. And speaking of all the four-legged friends and foes, I've been noticing, and I've been talking with my neighbors, more armadillos this year than
yes.
normal. So I don't know if you've heard anything about that or seen anything.
I haven't heard anything specifically about why there's an increase in them this year, other than it sounds like, you know, from talking to Drew and different people ever since kind of the 90s, armadillos have started to move north
yep.
from Oklahoma into Kansas. So we're increasingly seeing more of them. And armadillos, kind of unfortunately for the armadillo, are considered a nuisance animal pretty much everywhere they go. No state really wants them. So when it comes to controlling them, there are really no regulations for controlling them. Like there might be raccoons or those fur-bearing animals. So if people are having trouble with them in their lawns and gardens, I know those are the common
yep.
questions I get. They can take control measures. You can treat your lawn for grubs and worms. That's their main food source. However, that doesn't always deter them, especially if you have an established group of armadillos. So you can trap them, or you can, if you live out of town, you can use lethal means as well to control the problem.
Sure. Yeah, no, we had that as our Wilson Medical Center question of the day. That is the most popular one this month so far, and no one likes armadillos.
No.
we have about at least five in my neighborhood that I've spotted. I'm like, I want to get a paintball gun and just tag them so we know which one's which.
Yeah. You can kind of keep
yeah.
track.
Or use them as promotional armadillos. Just paint a 690 on there and you'd be at like a little billboard.
Oh,
so
yeah, there you go.
I don't know if we want to associate ourselves with armadillos, but
it might not be the best advertising campaign.
Yeah, my dog has been going crazy about them, so he's like obsessed with them right now. And so, because they go in the culverts and hide from them.
Yeah.
And so he's like checking all of them to try to get them. And of course, you do want to keep animals away because they are carriers of leprosy, correct? It can be.
Right. Yes, they can be. So also, if you're handling even a dead one, you want to take the precaution to wear gloves.
Yeah Weird critters, very prehistoric.
They are, and strange. Their defense mechanism, it's not a very good one. But they when they're scared, they jump straight up. So that's why you see so many hit
yeah.
on the road.
Yeah,
they don't have very good eyesight.
No,
either.
No, I got within 2 feet of one the other day and they didn't even know I was there. And they you'd think they would hear or see or smell better, but they don't seem to.
No, they don't have good senses
no.
at all.
No, but yeah, if they would just stay on the ground, then they wouldn't be as many roadkill. But yeah, the car will come up and they just jump straight up and smack. They're
yep.
done. So.
Uh-huh.
Good deal. All right. Well, thank you, David. And we're going to talk with Wendy Powell coming up next with some water management topics, that sort of thing. So mm-hmm. We appreciate all your insight on here, and we'll have you back in the next segment. So we are going to head towards the top of the hour with the news. A reminder that we are going up to a high today in the upper 70s, low 80s today for southeast Kansas and northeast Oklahoma. We'll have your Fox News local news coming up at the top of the hour. You are listening to the Mighty 690. 810 here on KGGF. Right now we have 60 degrees in Coffeyville. I guess it went down. Whatever. What the heck. Anyway, we're back here with the fine folks from K-State Research and Extension's Wildcat District. And Wendy Powell has some topics of water management.
Yes.
Well, water management is kind of important right now as we, we've had a little bit coming down from the sky, but not too much. We've got 8 inches, 0.08 inch over the last 24 hours here at the radio station. Wow. So
yeah, that's a nice small amount. We can settle some dust and hopefully prevent a bunch of runoff to the ponds that we have cleaned out.
Yes.
David talked about that earlier, and that's a really timely thing to do with the ponds that are getting emptier. But for those of you that are dealing with no water in ponds, we're troubleshooting how to get livestock the water that they need. So I see a lot of the what we call totes. That's like these big 250-gallon tanks encased in what looks like panels. And they are used to haul herbicide or fertilizer for fields. And so those are being used to haul water, which is fine, except for the herbicides and fertilizers used for plants is not really all that healthy for livestock. So if you are going to use those totes, just make for sure that you get the history of each particular piece of equipment, because you'll need to take action to clean it out. So there's some herbicides that are easily clean, like Roundup. You can clean that out with some soap and water, possibly some other chemical cleaners. But if the tote carried nitrogen or any other liquid fertilizer, things like that, then I really discourage you using those types of equipment, because the leaching from the fertilizer into the plastic is going to come back out in the water and it can be potentially toxic.
Yeah.
So we're already having problems with nitrates in our forages. We really don't need our water, you know, just adding to the problem. So be aware that there is the potential that those totes need to be cleaned out. Get the history of any of them that you want to purchase and start using. I do also want to mention that the Farm Service Agency, they do have some programs to help cover some of the costs of hauling water. So for producers that are having to really think outside the box and bring water onto the farm, then talk with your local Farm Service Agency about getting some funding back. I think they're covering mileage, probably not the cost of the actual water that you might have to purchase.
Sure.
So lots of opportunities there for folks to really think outside the box to water their livestock, but it's really important that they're using safe sources. So ponds, that's the other big concern. Whenever our ponds get low, it's just like, you know, if you leave a cup of salt water out and the water evaporates, the salt's still in the cup. So it's the same concept in a pond. And those salts can also have some toxicity levels with them. Depending on the type of animal, gestation stage, things like that, toxicities can vary. But if you're concerned about your pond, definitely need to visit with your vet. Give me a call. I'll be happy to work through some of that. But let's get it tested so that we don't have any deaths with our livestock.
Sure. And, you know, the other thing, speaking of water, that I've been hearing is where you might have had a pasture that's bordered by a creek or something and you didn't have to worry about fencing it. Well, now that that water could be gone, some of these cattle are just wandering down the creeks and can end up miles away. And so you're having to, you know, wrangle them back and get them back in. So that's another thing that people might not be thinking about, is the fact that they're going to have to look at their fencing.
Yes, that's exactly right. We just posted on our social media pages the Kansas Fence Law Seminar that they did a few weeks ago. And that's exactly why I was visiting with our marketing agent yesterday. And yeah, cattle are getting out, and it's, you know, if you're neglecting your fence, it's your responsibility if it's knowing neglect. So check those water gaps. It's a pain to get down in there sometimes, yeah. But it's very important so that we don't have motorist accidents.
Yeah, we don't want that. And, you know, the cattle are just looking for water, so you can't blame them.
Yeah, exactly. Just like those deer.
Yep.
Yeah,
just like the deer and the armadillos. For that
Yeah.
Okay, what else? Anything else on the topic of water management you want to hit on?
I just want to really make sure folks know that it's super important to make sure you get those tested. I can help you troubleshoot some ideas if you're needing to get water to pastures, or figure out some strategies if you're needing to combine herds, so that, you know, if you're having to haul hay and water, maybe combine two different herds to one pasture, so you're only hauling to one area instead of both. There's lots of different opportunity there, but know what those animals are going to be drinking. Of course, they all need to be offered clean, fresh water, and that's going to be your best option.
Sure. We're also talking about using old wells.
Yes. So there's a lot of folks that have called both David and I about, you know, I have this old well and I don't know if it's any good. Used to have a hand pump on it and I don't even know what to do with it anymore. Well, if there is a way that you can pump the water off that might be in the well, like a sump pump or some other fancy equipment word here. I'm not an equipment person, so I don't know. But if you can get that pump, the well cleaned out, let it fill back in, and then test the water that comes back into the well, and then we can tell if it's any good or not. You know, sometimes they'll be high in sulfur, things like that. So we still need to test. That might be why the well was not used in the first place, you know, bad water. So we just need to get it tested. Water tests are pretty inexpensive compared to the cost of animals. So, I don't know. I'm taking a guess here. It's probably less than $25.
It's usually around $20 to $30, depending on the test package you go with. The one for livestock water quality, it may only be $16. But then the household analysis, those get more expensive.
Okay, great.
And at least for like a livestock test, do you know the turnaround time on that? How quick it takes to get that info?
Usually I would say about a week to 10 days on turnaround time, although the lab has been really busy, with water tests, but also forage tests for nitrates and prussic acid as well. So I would say plan on more about a 2 week turnaround time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So anybody that's wanting to do a water sample, they need to have a clean container. Make sure that gets shipped overnight, early in the week, so it's not sitting in some post office or on a mail truck somewhere that needs to keep moving on down the road to the lab.
Sure.
So back to the wells. Make sure those get tested, and then work with a contractor to get a reliable pump installed or electricity or whatever you need there. But that's a really good opportunity for folks that might have an abandoned well to, you know, bring that back to life.
Sure, absolutely. Getting creative, as always, with the drought. We're seeing everyone scratching their heads and trying to come up with something. So when do you have the event coming up on the 22nd, right?
Yes. So our second Broomsedge field trial update is going to be held in Caney on October 22nd. We're going to start the day off at the rec center there on, I think it's First Street. And we're going to talk about pasture fertility. I imagine the conversation will come up on whether or not our fescue grasses have been killed out by the drought. And I can touch on that in a minute. The program will then we'll do lunch, and then we'll go out to the pasture, the hay field, where we've got the actual study going on and people can walk through and look at the differences in our fertilizer application rates.
Excellent. No, that'll be a good event.
Yeah. So if anybody is interested in attending that October 22nd, they need to call the Montgomery County Extension Office, 331-2690, and RSVP, because we do need a meal count. We are feeding you, so we need to know how many people that we're going to be expecting.
Good deal.
Yeah. So going back to the
fescue.
The fescue. Yes. Thank you. Yes. Yeah. So I've had several conversations with folks about, you know, is my fescue dead? Am I going to have to replant? Well, we don't know yet, of course, because nothing is growing yet. But the few scattered rains that we have had, and if that fescue tried to emerge and come out of dormancy, but didn't have enough root energy, nutrients to really make it out of dormancy before it got too dry again. So it's just kind of that battery dying off there. So each time it tries to emerge and then it can't, that's just more of its stores being used up. The other problem that we need to consider, or scenario, is if a pasture was either really well managed or had been fertilized, it was not overstocked at any rate over the last 10 years or so, those pastures are going to be more likely to survive too, because those roots are going to be healthier. The other thing to consider when we talk about fescue, those endophyte free varieties are probably going to not last through the drought simply because they are not as thrifty as like our Kentucky 31 plants or the novel endophytes. We have yet to see how those novel endophyte varieties will fare through this weather scenario. Those are the Texoma, Bar Optima, Estancia varieties. But probably our Kentucky 31, those grasses that are heavily infected with endophyte are going to live. Hmm. So, I mean, at least it's grass. It can be managed. It's just going to be a problem in the future, probably. So, we don't know. But, you know, optimistic.
Sure. And I know this is probably maybe more of a Flint Hills thing and really more of a spring thing. We are in pretty extreme fire danger right now. Is there ever any fall burning that happens, or is that really more of a spring thing?
Sure. There's situations where fall burning can be beneficial, especially for our cool season forages. So like if we know that we're trying to drill in some wheat or something like that, and you want to remove any forage that was left over that maybe didn't get used up through the summer, yes, that would be a good opportunity to do a fall burn. But this year, it's probably not a very good idea.
No.
We don't have much precipitation on the horizon. So I would say probably don't need to worry about that right now.
No, exactly. We had that rain come through, but we already here in southeast Kansas have fire danger that they're talking about today. So yeah,
yes.
It's just not a good situation, of course, but we're keeping an eye on it for sure. Yeah. Wendy, Davin, anything else you'd like to talk about?
I just wanted to add for the coyote workshop, dinner will be provided. It's free to attend. And then we also ask that you RSVP for a mule count, and you can do that by calling the Independence office also. And that number, as Wendy mentioned before, is 331-2690.
Okay. All right. Well, very good. Always a pleasure. I'm sorry that I won't have anyone in next week, but you guys are going to be up in Manhattan doing fun things with all your other extension pals.
Yes.
It's going to be great. So, all right. Well, you have a great rest of your day. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
All right. And we'll get started here with Open Line in moments on the Mighty 690.